always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Owners would, though. Gambling partners would. TV partners would care about tanking because, you know, as teams lose more, fans check out for that period while that team is tanking with the hope of checking back in whenever they get whatever superstar they would hopefully draft. And that is why Adam Silver cares. Adam Silver, it's become abundantly clear with Adam Silver what he cares about in his time, or what he has cared about in his time as NBA commissioner. And it is revenue, driving revenue, increasing revenue by any and all steps that he can. You look at an NBA court now during a playoff game, and it looks like a NASCAR car. You look at the jerseys, right? Everybody has the patches on there that, you know, for like the Lakers have the BB Go patch on their jersey, right? A lot of these, he's trying to, you know, his partnership with Nike, right? I think Nike has essentially ruined NBA jerseys and really kind of hurt branding across the league. But what it's done is hopefully inject a little shot in the arm with all of the new jerseys that come out every year. It forced people to buy new jerseys. You know, you look at like the way that the league sidled up to gambling and just was absolutely thrilled to partner with those gambling sites and all of that stuff. And you know, that's you know, I know that I'm saying this with Prize Pick as a logo up there, but like at the end of the day, you know, it has you know, altered the way that the sport is talked about. You look at, you know, any number of like any number of other efforts that Adam Silver has taken, the in-season tournament at a time where the league just so desperately needs to cut back the number of games that teams are playing. Adam Silver has actually lengthened the season for some teams. And it's just like, I, you know, and now he's talking about televising the lottery. He has expanded the draft to 2 days to collect some additional television revenue. Like in any way, shape, or form, if there is any decision that Adam Silver can make that might add a dollar to the bottom line, he operates with the quickness. And here, in this case, with tanking, as it might put at risk some of those dollars on the bottom line, he operated with the quickness. Flopping, whether or not that impacts the bottom line is kind of debatable. I think it does, because watchability is a big factor in the entertainment industry, but Adam Silver doesn't seem to think that it's that big of a deal, and he hasn't acted upon it yet. If he gets some kind of intel or information or research done that shows that flopping impacts the bottom line by X or Y dollars, then maybe, just maybe, he would finally act on that issue. But to me, the anti-tanking measures that have been taken here and that we've been talking about over the course of the show, they are just what they are. I know people are kind of hyperventilating over them. I don't really get why. I don't really understand the outsized reaction from online communities to these tanking measures. But like the measures themselves and the specific things that the league is trying to do to curtail tanking, that's just sitting over there. To me, the much bigger story here is that this is very clearly what Adam Silver cares about. And once again, what Adam Silver cares about a lot more is business stuff. And he just doesn't seem to understand that what he needs to be focused on is basketball stuff, watchability stuff, like making the game presentable. That's what matters here. And until Adam Silver gets it, which we are far enough into the game here with Adam Silver that, you know, I think we could probably comfortably say he's not going to get it. But until he gets that, I think he's going to continue to be a failure as a commissioner.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, let's talk about how this impacts the Lakers. So first and foremost, tanking, as Rob Pelinka has kind of said, tanking isn't necessarily an avenue that the Lakers feel comfortable heading down. I would point out to Rob Pelinka that the Lakers got Anthony Davis by way of years of tanking and building up that young core and then turning that young core into Anthony Davis. But same time, Rob, you know, got his job because Genie fired Jim Buss after those years of tanking. And she said that that was putting the Lakers brand at risk. So like saying that the Lakers can't tank is kind of sort of what Rob has to say. Now, if that is the case, if that is the assumption that, or that is, the modus operandi of the Lakers, while Rob is kind of calling the shots here, removing tanking from the toolbox, you know, for other teams, who might not have the advantages that like the Lakers have, that helps the Lakers. I think these anti-tanking measures, they kind of sort of help the Lakers. Like there's reports coming out. Like Jake Fisher said that a GM told him that he isn't looking to trade a first round pick beyond 2029. Well, if that GM happens to be the GM of a team that is in on Giannis, and that 2029 pick or the picks 2029 and later would be put on the table for Giannis, and now those are being taken off the table for Giannis, that helps the Lakers. We'll talk about Giannis here in a second. The other thing, too, you know, that needs to be pointed out is if tanking is I don't think it'll ever become a thing of the past. I think teams are always going to do whatever they possibly can to give themselves whatever advantage they can. And they're going to skirt this line and they're going to toe this line and they're going to step over the line wherever they can. While, you know, if the prospect is good enough, teams are going to risk it for that prospect. But you know, if tanking is kind of done away with, and if teams become more reluctant to trade picks, then the teams who are willing to trade picks probably are going to get a better bang for their buck, for trading those picks. So it might take fewer assets to go out and create a better roster in the immediate, fallout from these policies. So I think that kind of helps the Lakers, seeing as like if I was a team, like if I was like the Chicago Bulls, or if I was the Kings or the Bucks, again, who we'll talk about here in a second, but if I were some of these teams that are either in the early stages of or embarking into a full-blown rebuild that features years of tanking and drafting high and assembling a young core, if I am one of those teams and the league, you know, implements these policies right now, I would be pissed. I'd be like, well, like Chicago, right? they finally, finally embraced, you know, a tear down rebuild, and their reward for it is, you know, the league just made it more difficult to build that way. Now the front office that did a lot of that tearing down, they got fired anyway. So that might tell me that Jerry Reinsdorf was kind of sort of like not interested in that kind of a rebuild anyway. But like, if I'm one of those teams that is getting ready for that kind of a rebuild, these rules would piss me off quite a bit. Lakers are not there though, right? And they're talking about this being this 3-year trial window. Well, that doesn't really affect the Lakers. This 3-year window doesn't really affect the Lakers, because while that 3-year window is going on, the Lakers are going to be in the 3-year prime, hopefully longer. But like, Luka is going to be at the peak of his powers while all this is going on. So like, if they get more bang for their buck, you know, with the picks that they're using, while other teams are reluctant to trade those picks because they're waiting to see the fallout short and long term from these anti-tanking policies, then the Lakers stand to benefit greatly. So I think today, you know, if you're a highly cynical, bordering on Machiavellian Laker fan, today's a really good day for you, right? And by the way, that's kind of how I am. So like, when I saw all of this come out, you know, I had my questions about like, why are we doing this now? Why are you releasing this and leaking this the day of game 6 between OKC and San Antonio? Couldn't this have waited a few days even from now, so that like the Lakers, or so that the conference finals can be fully taken up, and like, over the course of the couple of days while there is no basketball, maybe that becomes the time that everybody can debate these anti-tanking policies. Those were my questions on it. But like, for me, being very Machiavellian, very selfish, oldest kid, only kid for like 7 years or so, like I do find myself saying like, go on, right? Like, go on. And I think most Lakers fans should be happy about these anti-tanking measures. Also, like, if you remove tanking from the toolbox of a lot of these smaller markets, that greatly complicates the extent to which they can compete with the Lakers. And typically, like, that's what surprised me, honestly, the most about these anti-tanking policies. It's like, for the most part, usually the NBA has almost erred too heavily on the side of making life that much easier on the little guy. But if you take away tanking from OKC, from San Antonio, from Utah, from, you know, a lot of these smaller markets, you make it, and you basically tell them, nope, you got to compete for talent against the Lakers, against the Knicks, against the Bulls, against, you know, the Celtics, and against these either larger markets or bigger brands, without the ability to just be really bad for a few years and assemble a young core. Then I don't know what those teams are going to be doing, you know, moving forward as they build out their talent pools. But for the Lakers, you basically just told them that, yeah, your picks are going to go further. Like, your dollar is going to go further in this pick economy. By the way, like, the Lakers, I don't think they're going to be a lottery team anytime soon while they have Luka Doncic. But like, one thing that might happen towards the end of Luka's prime, right, is that, like, kind of like we've seen with the Lakers before Luka got there, they had kind of been trending in that direction of like, play a lot of play-in games, couple play-in games, and then, you know, maybe missing the play-in altogether or whatever. And if you're like a play-in team, right, 9 or 10 seed, or a high lottery team, like, that's apparently where the league wants everybody to reside. And if like this might actually help extend Luka's prime. You know, in that, like the Lakers, if they become kind of a mid-tier team and their second rounders become as valuable as we talked about earlier in the show, then that might make it that much easier to build around an older Luka. So that's something also to keep in mind if these rules are ratified into permanent implementation moving forward. So for the sake of the Lakers, today was a good day, even though I don't really necessarily agree with Adam Silver caring about this at all. Let's talk about Giannis. So as far as, again, you know, if let's just say now, look, Miami is one of the teams that's in on Giannis. I don't believe the Knicks are as in on Giannis. We'll see how the finals go for them. But I believe they've probably done enough by getting to the finals to let James Dolan know that they want to stick together and continue to build through continuity. Maybe some, you know, peripheral improvements and stuff like that to give themselves a better, give that core a better shot, but not like the full fledged, all right, trade three wings for Giannis path that they might have embarked on had they lost in the first round or something like that. So New York is kind of sort of off the table. Boston, I guess, is a potential landing spot for Giannis there. I saw Matt Moore posted the odds for next year's champion, and Boston was like really high up on that list. And that really kind of surprised me. I wondered if they were taking a Giannis trade into account there. If it's Boston and they are wondering whether or not they should trade a longer term pick as part of a package for Giannis, and now are convinced that they shouldn't do that by way of these tanking policies or these anti-tanking rules. And that brings the market back to, you know, where the Lakers can operate in. That's a good day for the Lakers. And, you know, for the Lakers also, you know, all they've had, you know, their offer is pretty straightforward, as is like Miami's, right? But the Lakers offer is pretty straightforward. And I know, like, I always, every time I bring up Giannis for the Lakers, I get like five or six comments in here, you know, telling me that I am somehow unaware of how unlikely it might be that the Bucks would trade Giannis just for cap space. I know. Trust me, I know. But like in this case, though, if the Lakers offer is basically here's three first round picks, right? The one that we would use on draft night, and then two future firsts. Here is a bunch of cap room or at least cap flexibility. Here's a big trade exception that you could turn into more picks if you want to turn that into more picks. But like, there's our offer. Like, it's pretty straightforward. If these anti-tanking rules make it that much trickier for all of these other teams to get involved in those trade negotiations, now all of a sudden the Lakers trade package becomes to look that much more appealing. And for somebody like me who thinks that the Lakers' best chance at catching OKC or San Antonio is to go all in for an Anthony or for a Giannis type, again, not the worst news. So it's going to be interesting. I really think that the league completely screwed over the Bucks, because what they need to do after they trade Giannis is bottom out, get into the lottery as frequently as they can, get as high in that lottery as they can, as frequently as they can, and rebuild by way of youth and all of that good stuff. But if the league now decides, nope, that is not a path we are comfortable with for teams anymore, what does Milwaukee do? Does Milwaukee trade Giannis? Like, honestly, he's been so wishy-washy about, you know, wanting to explicitly demand a trade or ask for a trade, that if you're Milwaukee, do you basically require him to say, trade me, in order to eventually trade him? Because there is no tear down rebuild waiting for you at the other side of this rainbow. That's might be how I would look at it. If you're Milwaukee, you know, are you interested in like offers from teams that I guess like maybe the path is to take like Miami's offer, right? Where they're offering Tyler Hero and Jaquez and Khalil Ware and like three mid-tiered picks and like does that make that trade package more intriguing? Because it basically forces you into the middle, and the middle is, you know, not a bad place to be in this lottery. As I'm saying all of this out loud, Adam Silver, like if we're talking about like reading Adam Silver's mind and by way of his decisions, he has been basically like with the multi-apron CBA and now with making tanking that much more difficult, where Adam Silver is trying to get everybody is to 500. He wants everybody to be, that's it. Yeah. He wants everybody to be mediocre.